Shvi'a Vayetze is the end of the confrontation between Lavan and Yaakov. You may recall from last year, we left the story kind of in the middle, where Yaakov and Lavan are trading arguments, and Yaakov is telling Lavan about how hard he worked for him and how badly he was treated, and etc., etc. So here we have the response for what it is. The pasuk says, this is in Perek Lamed Aleph, pasuk Mem Gimel, Vayam Lavan, Vayomer Yaakov, Habanos Bnosai, Vabonim Bonai, Vahatzon Tzoni, Vachol Asher Ataroe Lihu, Vlivnosai Maaselo Eila Hayom, Olivnehen Asher Yolodim. So there is a response here which is subject to a lot of interpretation, what exactly Lavan is trying to say, but the words are, on the surface, that his response to Yaakov is, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the tzon is mine, and everything you see is mine, and what am I going to do this day, what can I do this day to my daughters or to their children? So there is a lot of interpretation about all the words in that pasuk, pretty much. And just in terms of what the words are, but what seems to be clear is that there isn't a real response to Yaakov's arguments from the previous Aliyah. So to that, Revolba has a comment where he notes that this is pretty typical, that when there is a stira, it's basic human nature, when there is a stira between what people want and logic, so they just don't hear what you're saying, and they just talk right past it. But within that, the Mefarshim have different understandings of just what it is he's trying to say, whether it's responsive or not. While some understand it to mean that he's trying to calm Yaakov down and say, listen, this is my family, what do you expect me to do? While others understand it's kind of the opposite tone, he's being tough, he's not acknowledging any rights on Yaakov's behalf and saying that everything is mine, the daughters are mine, the kids are mine, the property is mine. And others say that he was just trying to say something kind of in between, saying that maybe he would exert power over him, but he's not going to because of Kadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it is. In that same context, the whole idea of Habanos Benosai, so here you have interpretations again, which range all over the place. Some understand it to mean that he's saying, you shouldn't worry, I'm just coming to be with my family, and others understand again an opposite point, that this is all mine, so if I want to take it back, then that would be within my rights. The language of Benosai, how many are referred to there, so the Medrash quotes, Rashi quotes the Medrash, that he's talking about all the wives, because Bilhah and Zilpah were apparently also his daughters from Pilegish. So all of the four wives were his daughters. And the idea of Habanos Bnosai, Habanim Banai, so what does that suggest about the relationship with grandparents, and particularly maternal grandparents? So we have a rule in general that we say, Bnei Banim Harehim Kibanim. And the Gemara Maseches Yevamos and Daf Samach Beis and the Beis tries to learn from here that we say this also by Bnei Bonos, that even by a maternal grandfather, the status of the grandchildren is as if they are children. The Gemara ultimately doesn't accept it from here because it makes the rest of the pasuk hard to understand, because he also talks about tzon. But the Gemara does uphold the point from elsewhere, which leads to a very challenging statement in Rabbeinu Bachya, who quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel, that we only say Bnei Banim Arehim Kabanim and not Bnei Banos. But as the Achronim will point out, it's difficult, seems to be against the Gemara. There's a discussion about this that the Rebbe of Israel Hildesheimer has. It's a sefer, which I'll probably mention a few times today, mentioned in the past, called Kamatar Lakhi, which has a collection of different essays, mostly from Rashi Yeshiva and recent Achronim on the Parsha. A lot of very interesting things. I'll mention it a few times today. So there's an essay from Rav Israel Hildesheimer where he goes into this issue, has a little bit of a lumdus about it. What exactly is the story? Rav Nosson Gestetner and a sefer on Chumash talks about this, Rabbeinu Bachya and its difficulty. And there is a long discussion about it in the Sefer Ma'oris Yitzchak, all trying to address this question. Ma'oris Yitzchak writes that in terms of the contradiction between Rabbeinu Bachya and the Gemara in Yevamos that he asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky about it, and that Reb Chaim Kanievsky responded it's actually a machlokas in Chazal. But okay, even if it's a machlokas in Chazal, it still needs a lot of explanation. So there's a lot written about this. But it seems that bottom line is that Bnei Banos Haroso Kibanim, and what exactly is Rabbeinu Bachya getting at is a challenge. Some also point out that when he says the Hatzon Tzoni, that he's trying to make an aggressive point here, that he's saying that he was cheated by Yaakov in terms of the whole plan that he had for the allocation of the Tzon, that he considered that to be some kind of a mirma, and that that's what he was trying to convey when he said that. What about this language of Le'ela, Ma'aseh Le'ela? So how does that flow from the sentence? So here you have some of the commentaries understand that Ksava Kabbalah writes that he was trying to say, like he's so angry, he can't look at them. Well, Ela, to these. Could be. Others understand it differently. The language of Hayom, so what does Hayom come to mean in that pasuk? And here again, you have a whole range of interpretations. The Rabbeinu Ephraim writes that Hayom means to say that all of a sudden you're leaving today. Had I known, had you given me advance notice, I would have been able to bring you all kinds of gifts and all kinds of wonderful parting presents. But now, because you're leaving so suddenly, so I don't have anything. The Rakeach writes, a different interpretation, that I used to be happy to have the family around, and now I'm not going to. Hayom, that's changing. And the Ravanel understands it as referring to his whole set of conditions. He's saying that this is what the story is today. And again, in terms of opposite interpretations, so the Mari Bruna writes that Hayom is there to say that until today I maybe wanted to do some damage, but now I won't. While the Ksava Kabbalah has the opposite interpretation, saying, okay, today I'm not going to do anything, but who knows what the future holds. Okay, so again, this pasuk just contains a lot of different conflicting interpretations about the tone, about the content, and about the subject matter. And the next pasuk continues, V'ata l'cha nichrusa v'ris, ani v'ata v'ayo l'eid b'ni u'v'necha. So, yes, sir.
What about the part that he threatens his daughters and his...
So is it a threat or is it not? That's the question. Right, so all of this is subject to a lot of different interpretations. That's every line pretty much seems open to a range of different understandings. So here he says, though, let's make a covenant between the two of us and me and you, and this will be an aid, this will be a testimony between the two of us. So first of all, this atah, that's what we're supposed to do now. The Ksava Kabbalah again comments that this is pretty typical of Rishayim, who pretend to be on your side, but really they have intention to hurt you. So here, actively, he is playing, like he's a Rodev Shalom, like he's looking to try to create a positive relationship, but that's not necessarily what he really has in mind. The Lacha, so there's an extra hey at the end, and the Netziv comments that that's about saying to you specifically that Lavan is saying that maybe I can't make deals with other people, but with you I can make a deal because you are God-fearing. This is an important point because this is something which we have to be very careful to hold on to in an era where there's a lot of Chil Hashem and a lot of scandal. One of the most depressing aspects is the loss of this awareness, the loss of this perception, that the idea should be that if somebody is dealing with a religious Jew, if somebody is dealing with a person who wears a yarmulke, a person who professes to be God-fearing, so part of that is that they should know that he's honest, and they should know that he can make a deal with him, they can trust that person in a way that is above and beyond how you could trust an average person. And the fact that Bavon Aseinu HaRabim, so many scandals and so many episodes of Chiddush Hashem, that idea should be undermined and that idea should erode, is something really to cry about, is something really to feel a tremendous loss, and it should be our challenge and our zchus that we should be able to quickly bring things back to the way it should be. And that people should understand that dealing with somebody with a yarmulke, that they can trust them, that they know that that is a person who's going to be honest. So this idea of nichrus bris, that we're going to make a bris, that we make a covenant, that Rav Soloveitchik and many others note that there's different kinds of brisos, different kinds of covenants. So sometimes you have a bris because you're going to do something together, you have a shared vision. This is a more minimal kind of bris. This is just a non-aggression pact. This is just a test that they're not going to hurt each other. And here there are different understandings that we're going to see Yaakov is going to take one stone, but Lavan's family is going to take many stones, because perhaps to them there is the idea that they can all come together as one, while for Yaakov it's more minimal. For Yaakov it's really about creating a barrier between them. That's one stone is a wall, but nonetheless a non-aggressive one. In terms of the reading of the pasuk, v'haya, so what does it mean, v'haya? What are we referring to as going to be a witness? So this is actually a machlokas Rashi and the Ramban. The Rashi understands that it's referring to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, God will be a witness. While the Ramban understood differently that it's referring to the bris as the witness. But Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch argues, doesn't quote the whole machlokas, but he argues that it has to be like Rashi says, that it's the bris, that it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu who is the witness, because it's Zachar. So Lashon Zachar, it's got to be talking about God and not about the bris. Okay, so Vayikach Yaakov Oven, V'yirimeha Matzeva. So Yaakov takes the stone, he sets it up as a Matzeva. V'yomer Yaakov Le'achav, look to Avonim, V'yichu Avonim V'yasu Gal, V'yochlu Shamala Gal. So Yaakov says to somebody, gather stones, and they took the stones, and they made a pile, and they ate on this pile, on this heap. So first of all, what does it mean, Le'achav? Who's being referred to there? What does that word mean? He had brothers who were there with him? So Rashi says it's a reference to his sons who were like brothers to him. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein has an interesting comment on this, and Sefer Aleinu L'Shabeach. He says that the reason it's acceptable to use the word Echav for brothers is because that's the kind of word brothers for sons, is because that's the kind of relationship it should be. It should be a very close relationship like brothers. And he writes there that he mentioned this at some setting he was in where there was a non-Jewish professor who was a very educated person, and this professor was so taken aback by this comment of the Chachmas HaTorah that he was incredibly impressed, and it had a tremendous impact on him. Gets a little synergy, I think I may have mentioned last week when we talked about the concept of fasting on the day of a wedding. I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, but just as a kind of a stretch for synergy. But we mentioned last week the idea of fasting on the day of a wedding. So the idea that, which was rooted in last week's Shvi, that is because the chassan gets mechilas avonos, like a personal Yom Kippur. So my father, Zechon Levrach, his yahrzeit is this week. He was at one point a chaplain in the Air Force, and he had a superior in the Air Force who he said was kind of anti-Semitic. But when he heard this idea, he heard this notion of the chassan kala have a personal Yom Kippur on the day of their wedding, thought that was such an impressive idea that kind of turned him around a little bit. So Zilberstein describes something a little similar here. He says this person was so impressed with the whole paragraph describing his reaction to this idea, he thought it was such a chachma. Now, it's interesting because we don't usually say like that. As far as parenting advice, we say that there should be boundaries and that parents should not try to be like non-parents, meaning usually they shouldn't try to be like friends and peers as opposed to parents. So it's interesting that here he seems to be making a conflicting point. I assume what he means is that ach is milashon achva. It means it's something that comes from just a strong kesher, a strong sense of trust in each other. And he's saying that parents, not that they should consider themselves equal to the children, but that they should have a relationship which is built on achva. In any event, the Ramban understands differently, and this will be relevant, we'll come back to this point. The Ramban understands that he's talking to Lavan's brothers, that he didn't want to order around Lavan. He wanted to treat him with respect. He was his father-in-law. Simchas Zissel Broyd in the Sefer Sonderach has a number of comments about this whole interaction, where you see that despite everything that's going on, Yaakov still tries to treat his shver tries to treat Lavan with a sense of respect. So here he's going to give an instruction. So he doesn't give the instruction to his father-in-law, he gives it to the brothers. And that's how many understand, many work off this understanding of the Ramban, that this was an instruction to Lavan's side, and that's what we reflected a minute ago when we talked about the Soloveitchik's interpretation of one stone versus many stones, because the many stones, that was the instruction to Lavan's family. Okay, so here, this next pasuk is a well-known pasuk. It may be unique, right? The question is it unique or not? What does unique literally mean? Unique means one of a kind. So is this next pasuk one of a kind? Pasuk says, Vayikru lo Lavan, Yigar Sahadusa, Vyakov Karolo Galed. So here, this Chefza, whatever you want to call it, so Lavan called it Yigar Sahadusa, which appears to be an Aramaic word. And Yaakov calls it Galed. So are those just two versions of the same thing? And if so, why does the Pasuk have to tell us that? What exactly is going on? The presence of an Aramaic word in the Chumash is itself interesting. And it's also noteworthy that the Torah has to tell us what he called it. Why exactly do we care? The Sfarno writes that this is making a point that Yaakov didn't change his lashon, he didn't change his language. So even when here he's in an interaction with somebody and they are sharing this bris together, but even when we're talking about that, the other party calls it something and Yaakov goes out of his way to call it something Jewish. And the truth is, it's a pretty plausible reading of the pasuk here, that's consistent, as we'll see, with other themes in this aliyah, that essentially there's a tension here. You'll see this coming up again, that loved ones basically trying to say, listen, we can all be the same, we can all be one, you'll have your God, I'll have my God, etc., etc. And Yaakov is saying, no, I'm making a deal with you not to kill each other, but I'm not the same, and my beliefs is different, and you can't take my belief in God and mix it in with yours. So in that sense, the pasuk really reads like the Sfarno was saying, that here Lavan is using this Aramaic term so that they could see this on common ground, and Yaakov was saying, listen, I'm a Jew, I speak Hebrew, and this is what I call it by a Jewish name. So in any event, this idea that it is Aramaic, Medrash has a line that says that you shouldn't let this language be kal to you, because you see the Torah gives it kavod. What is this language? So in some girsos it says Lashon Parsi, in some girsos it says Lashon Sursi. It seems that it's all a way of saying Aramaic. And it's interesting that the Medrash says this is an example of the Torah giving it kavod in light of what we just said. But in any event, the Torah uses this phrase. And as mentioned before, the question is it unique? Is there anywhere else in the Torah where we have any Aramaic? Hi?
Kufra.
That's Aramaic, because Gemara says Kufra. I think that's just a cognate. Probably, I wouldn't say for sure. I'm saying that because you don't find that broad as an example, so I'm assuming those are cognate terms. We know that Aramaic and Hebrew share a certain core, so the idea that there'll be a similarity, it's going to be hard to distinguish what's just a cognate and what is actually taking from Aramaic. So there is a Lashon Masechta Sofrim. Masechta Sofrim writes, the Kala Torah Kula Ivrisi, Elishiesh Bo Dvarim Shel Targum. That the Torah is all in Hebrew, but there are things that are of Targum. And then it goes on to say, Ivris Shekosvu Targum, Targum Shekosvu Ivris La Yikrubo, that you can't switch it around, you can't have the Targum parts written in Hebrew and the Hebrew parts written in Targum. And then it goes on to say, Vezehu Targum, what's an example of Targum in the Torah? Yigaris Adusa Vichaverov. So, what is its friends? Is there something else? And then it goes on to say, "V'yesh omum lo dibra elal yagar sadusa v'galeid shehem shtei l'shona shalibis v'targum." They're talking about this case where there's two phrases, one is Hebrew and one is Targum, and the rule is lo yahavchein. You can't switch them around. You can't trade one for Hebrew and one for Targum. So first of all, what is chaveirav? What are the other possible Aramaic words? So the Hagos Yaveh Tzvi Yaakov Emden writes that in Vizosa Bracha you find Asa Meruvis Kodesh. So Asa is Aramaic, right? To come in Aramaic is Asa. Or at least the Shoresh is Aramaic, even if it gets adapted. So does that count if the Shoresh is Aramaic and then it's adapted? So the Sefer Birkas Yavetz of Baruch Shimon Deutsch, who's a Rebbe in Kol Torah, so, you know, then you're going to have to say there's many more examples. He doesn't think that that's the reason that's going to be included. If you look in the Torah Tamima, he has a number of other possible examples also. So he suggests the Berkos Kohen that maybe it includes Ksuvim, and then you have things like Sefer Daniel. We have a lot of Aramaic, but he struggles with this. But he also asks the question, which he doesn't really answer, that what's the Havamina? The Gemara says, oh, you have this Pasuk of Yagar Sadusa and Galeid, you can't switch them around. Well, of course you can't switch them around. That what? You'd think that, okay, we could just tell a story any way we want. We could say that Yaakov said the Hebrew word and Lavan said the Aramaic. Or if you want, we could say it the other way. We could say that Lavan said the Hebrew word and Yaakov said the Aramaic. I mean, what's the Havamina? This is going to be a false representation of what happened. So there is a discussion about this in a Sefer called Shabbos Samoedim. It's written by Rav Zev Freund, where he notes that it's not about reporting, it's not simply about reporting that Yaakov said it in Hebrew and Lavan said in Aramaic. But normally, if somebody speaks whatever language they speak, so we find the story is recorded in the Torah in Hebrew, regardless of what language they actually spoke. So when the Torah conveys something in a certain language, it's meant to convey some specific meaning. There's a chashivas to it that is meant to come to us. In this case, Rabbeinu Bachya writes that Yagar Sadusa was actually a reference in a complicated way to the sun, and it's an Avodah Zarah kind of reference, while Yaakov's reference of Galeid is meant to refer to Bitachon. There's a significance to these words. But in any event, that's how he understands the Shabbos Modin, that the point of saying Lo Yavchem is not that it would be Sheker, because we don't have a problem necessarily with reporting the events in Lashon HaKodesh, just like in all the history books that we read. If we read a book in English that talks about the history of ancient Rome, so all the quotations are going to be in English, and we understand that it means that this is the English translation of what they said. That's not going to bother us. It's that when the Torah conveys it in a certain language, it's meant to be in that language because it's conveying a message. So if you want some additional stretch of kind of synergy here, so here this is the Smichas Aparshia synergy. This is the last Aliyah in Vayetze. So in the very opening of Vayishlach, I remember many years ago I came across a sefer. A sefer was called Minchas Machvas. I opened it up, he had the following vort, which I've remembered all these years because it's kind of cute, that it says about next week's parsha, that the pasuk says that Yaakov sends a message to Esav, and he says, Kos omrun la'adoni le'esav. This is what you should say to my master, to Esav. So the Gemara says in Sota that Birchas Kohanim has to be done b'lashon HaKodesh. We know that because even though other things can be done in any language, but Birchas Kohanim has to be b'lashon HaKodesh because the Pasuk in Nasa says, Ko Sevarchu es b'nei Yisrael. This is how you should do it. So Ko means got to be b'lashon HaKodesh. So he says here also that Ko Somrun Ladoni Le'esa, that also has to be b'lashon HaKodesh. So why should it be b'lashon HaKodesh? Says because you see Rashi over there. Rashi says in Lavan Garti, famous Rashi, right? Lavan Garti, Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti, that I observe the Tayag Mitzvahs. He says, oh, you see, he's saying a Gematria, it's not going to work in any other language. So he's got to keep it with Lashon HaKodesh because you have to preserve the Gematria. So, okay, that's one way to say it. But we also could connect it to this idea that just like the Sforno was saying that Yaakov maintains his Lashon HaKodesh speech, so too, if there is a truth to the statement that Kos Somruin is also meant to be Lashon HaKodesh, maybe it's a similar statement that when he's communicating with Esav, he's trying to say also, I'm going to still send my messages in Hebrew and I don't want them translated, I want you to convey that I'm still not being Mishana my Lashon. Okay. The Torah Tumimah has a comment over here where he notes that this whole idea conveys to us that Hebrew and Aramaic are really like one language, even though the Gemara says that Aramaic is chol. But nonetheless, apparently they are connected. They have the status of one language for some purposes. And he says that's why, he says, always bothered by this, that you're not supposed to write a get in a mixture of different languages. But the mice of the getin that we use are made up of Hebrew and Aramaic. So isn't that a mixture of languages? Like we find in many of our liturgy aspects, that we have Hebrew-Aramaic mixtures throughout. So you're right, it's because that's not called two languages, it's really one language. Aramaic is like the whole version of it, but in that sense, it's a kind of precursor to Yiddish. What exactly is the story about Yiddish? That's a different discussion, but the idea of, but nowadays we know that we have communities in Eretz Yisrael where they want to speak specifically in Yiddish because they want to leave Lashon HaKodesh only for matters of Kedusha. So you have such a concept of a parallel language, which is meant to serve different purposes, but is still linked in some way. Okay, so let's continue here a little bit. So v'yomer lav and hagal hazeh eid beniyu v'encha hayom akein kara shmo galeid. So Lavan says, okay, this is going to be a witness between the two of us, and that's what we'll call it. V'hamitzvah asha amar yitzef Hashem beniyu v'encha ki nisaser ish merayehu. And the mitzvah also, he says, that represents that God is watching between me and you when we are hidden from each other. And then he goes on to say, what I don't want you to do, im tanes benosai, v'im tikach nashima benosai, ein yishimonu. Re'ei elkim eid beni v'necha. That if you are going to afflict my daughters, or you will take extra wives, which is going to then divert both attention and property away from my daughters, there's nothing between us. And see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the witness. So what does it mean, you will afflict my daughters? So what this apparently is a reference to, Chazal understand, it means to neglect them in the area of Tashmish. And the Gemara in Maseches Yuma, the 8th parak, the Gemara derives from here, that's how we know that one of the Inuyim on Yom Kippur is that Tashmish is prohibited, because we see here it's called Lashon Inuyim. So the Ber Yosef has a comment over here. He says, what exactly is he thinking? Why does he feel that he has to mention this here? That this is something he all of a sudden has to be concerned about. He was never concerned before, and now all of a sudden he has to be concerned that Yaakov is going to neglect one of his daughters. So he suggests, the Ber Yosef, that this is related to an idea that you find in the Ramban, that the Ramban discusses the question of how is it that Yaakov was able to marry two sisters. If it's against the Torah, we understand that the Avos kept all the mitzvahs of the Torah, so how was he able to marry two sisters? So the Ramban understands that he only kept the mitzvahs outside of Eretz Yisrael. And so going back into Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't apparently the plan, and we know that L'maisa, what happened is that Rachel never makes it in. And therefore he ends up only having one sister at that point in time. But the question could be that perhaps his plan was that he was going to separate from one of them, or both of them, or who knows, going to separate from one of them. So maybe that's what Lavan was afraid of. That he says, okay, going back to Eretz Yisrael now means you're going to separate from one of my daughters, and I don't want you to do that. And maybe, he goes on to say, that maybe Yaakov would have thought that wouldn't be considered inui as far as they're concerned. They wouldn't consider that oppressive, because since it was for reasons of the Torah, that they were such tzidkanios that they would have gone along with it. And he also suggests that maybe this was Lavan's plan all along, that if we want to really, really attribute some Machiavellian planning to him, so maybe the whole idea that Lavan ends up kind of tricking him into marrying two wives, the two sisters, and even though he has to work twice as long, but we know that he marries Rachel immediately after he marries Leah. So basically, a week after. So basically, Lavan kind of worked things out that he would be married right away to both sisters at once. So maybe that was all a plan to keep him from going back to Eretz Yisrael. So very attributing quite a lot of forethought then, but okay, could be. So in any event, that's what he suggests. So to go on a little bit, Yomer Lavan LeYaakov, Hinei Hagal HaZeh, Hinei HaMatzeva, Shiyarisi, Beini, Ubeinecha. Okay, here it is. This is the Gal. Eid Hagal HaZeh, V'Eidah HaMatzeva. So the heap and the pillar. Imani lo avor elecha esagal hazeh vimatalo savor elai esagal hazeh. I'm not going to pass. You're not going to pass. Be'etzem aseva hazol sarah, not to hurt anyone. So it's an interesting discussion whether this was kept or not. Whether Bilam, as a reflection of Lavan, did he stick to this? And there is discussion if you want to look in the Sefer Chavetzela Sashar. He has a discussion that technically this should seem to cover Moav also. So it's interesting why the Gemara says ultimately, the Gemara of the Kama tells us that even though ultimately Moshe is told he's not supposed to start up with Moav, but Moshe thought that he could. He thought that he had a Kal Vachomer that he should attack Moav. So why is that a Havimina if this should have all been covered by the Bris? So there's an interesting discussion about this in the Chavetzel Sasharim. You can take a look over there. Okay, so then he goes on. I'll read this pasuk whole because you see it's a question really how to read it. Elohei Avram veElohei Nachor yishpetu veineinu Elohei Avihem vayishava Yaakov befachad aviv Yitzchak. So it's a question with those words, the words preceding Avram and Avihem. So is that a reference to a Kadosh Baruch Hu or is that not? Is that a reference to Kodesh Shachal? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi says it's Elokei Avram, that's Kodesh, Elohei Nachor, that's Chol, because that refers to Avodah Zarah, and Elohei Avihem, so that's Chol again. It's a quotation from Maseches Sofer. So what exactly is going on here? So the understanding that many have is that essentially, as Rav Soloveitchik explains, or others explain, that Yaakov doesn't, ultimately, we can see he, in this pasuk, he only invokes Yitzchak, because the idea was that Lavan was trying to say is that Avram started off as an Avodah Zarah in his youth, that's what he was. So he's trying to say, okay, we could have it all together. We could have my God who's an Avodah Zarah and your God, and that's all included in Avram, because we say Avinu, say Avichem, that was all included in what was going on. Rav Schwab has it a little bit differently. He says that it's a reference in terms of Nachor, that Lavan thought that since Nachor actually believed in God, but intellectually, and so with, together with everything else, that maybe that means you could join them all together. So ultimately, the point is that Yaakov rejects this, and Yaakov only invokes Yitzchak. He doesn't want to create the impression that he's signing on to this merger of all the religions, which again, as I mentioned before, seems to be a theme in the nature of these interactions. And Sefer Nachli Amunai writes that also his emphasis of Yitzchak and not this whole package deal that Lavan is trying to say is a reflection of an idea that if you hear somebody say heresy, hear somebody say kfira, so then you should counter it with Amunah. So that's what he was ultimately doing. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a comment over here that the line in the Haggadah that we say, Bikesh Yaakov, Bikesh Lavan, Lakar Asakol, that Lavan wanted to uproot everything, he wanted to destroy the whole Jewish people. So Rabbi Yaakov says this is what's referring to, that Lavan wanted to say that, listen, it could all be blended in into one thing, and it's only because Yaakov is firm and he says, no, it doesn't work. That's not going to be acceptable. So just this idea of Pachad Yitzchak, which many are familiar with because of the Svarim of Futner. So first of all, the notion that he's invoking Yitzchak here and not Avram, another angle to that. So it's just interesting. There is, again, the mention I said before, Kamatar L'Khi. So there's an essay there from Rav Tzvi Friedman where he discusses the fact that there is a pasuk in Vayigash. The pasuk says that when Yaakov is going down to Mitzrayim, along the way, Vayizbach Zvachim Lelokei Aviv Yitzchak. He brings korbanos in honor of to the God of his father Yitzchak. And the question could be raised: well, what about Avram? He was also involved with God, wasn't he? So why is it not the God of Avram? So he writes there that the Medrash says on that pasuk that Mikan Shechayev Bekovid Aviv Yosar Me'avi Aviv, that one is obligated in respect for his father more than his grandfather. And there's a whole story in the Ma'arik and the Ramah that we talked about this a little bit last year, I think, that the Ma'arik says there's no Chiyuv Kavod for a grandfather, and the Ramah says, no, you see, it's not true. It's that what this Medrash is telling us is that there's more Kavod for the father, but not that there's no Kavod for the grandfather. And in fact, the Sefer Livya Schein, it's quoted by Rabbi Akiva Eger, writes that if the father is alive, so then, ironically, because the father's alive, there should be more kavod due to the grandfather than the father against this din. Why is that true? Why does the father being alive make him win less? Because there is a rule. Right, the father is chayav in kavod to his father. So we know there's a Gemara, again, if you were with us last year in June, we talked about this Gemara. There is a Gemara which is read in a lot of different ways, but the Gemara says that when you have your mother and your father both ask you for something at the same time, and you can't do them both at the same time, so who do you listen to first? You listen to the father, because he va'ata chayav b'chvodo, that you are obligated to respect your father, and so is your mother. So you put the two together, so then that creates a priority for the father. So presumably that should be true here also, he assumes, that if the father is alive, so then the father is chayiv and kavod to his father, and that should tip the scales. So he says that's his chiddush against this din in Shulchan Aruch, against this din in the Ramah, which is based on the Medrash. So this article asks, so here Yitzchak's still alive, so then Yitzchak should give priority to Avram, and he should take his oath in the name of Avram. Then he goes on to say, like we just said, that there's another cheshbon here, that there was a reason why he's invoking Yitzchak, not simply because he could have chosen either the father or the grandfather, but because it's a part of the statement that he's making, and therefore that's why it's phrased the way it is. But otherwise, you could have asked the question from this whole hierarchy. There's a nice idea that Rav Schwab has, which is really kind of a tangent, but it's just definitely worth thinking about. It says the idea that Pachad Yitzchak is reflective of the fact this is the end of the previous Aliyah, so you find that phrase Pachad Yitzchak, and the notion of Pachad Yitzchak is that Yitzchak represents the Midas Ha'ira, and so the Avram represents Ava, and Yitzchak is the Midas Adin, and Yaakov is Emes, is the music of them both. So there is a Gemara Masechet Shabbos and Daf Pei Tes, it's a long discussion, you can look it up, but the Gemara is going to say that ultimately the Jews are going to get in trouble. They're going to be deserving of great punishment, Chalila, and that God is going to, Kaviyachal, look for a reason not to do it, look for a defense for them. So he'll turn to Avram Avinu, and to our great shock, Avram's going to say, listen, okay, that's what they deserve, that's what they deserve. So then he goes to Yaakov, and Yaakov's going to say, oh, that's what they deserve, then that's what they deserve. So then he goes to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak comes up with a big limitzchus, a big discussion. First he says that it's not just my children, God, your children also, and if you really do the math, how bad could they possibly be? They spend half the time sleeping, and the first 20 years don't count, and it isn't. So there isn't so much time left to sin. So Rav Schwab comments that it's interesting that Yitzchak is supposed to be Midas Adin, and he's the only one who's Dam L'Chavzchus. It doesn't say that they should just get the punishment they deserve. But then he goes on to say, so that's the whole point, that what do we call it? We call it dan l'chavzchus, right? That it's not a gift, it's a judgment. The point is that proper judgment requires also the consideration of all the mitigating factors. So that is midas hadin, that the midas, same way that the midas hadin is going to say you have to prove your innocence, you also have to prove your guilt, that it has to be done in a very precise way on both sides. So if there's something to consider that is mitigating, if there is a way to see the story that puts things in a different context, so then that is considered to be din. That's not something that's anything less than din, and that's the point that he makes. It's a worthwhile point to consider. Okay, so here the pasuk goes on to say that Yaakov shechted something. Vayizbach Yaakov zevach bohar, vayikro liachav lachol lachem, v'yochlu lachem v'yalinu bohar. So here he shechts the zevach, he shechts the animal, and you might think that it's a korban, but Rashi tells us no. Shechet behemos lemishta, he shechted animals only to eat. And lechav, here Rashi says lohavav shim lavan, so it's interesting why in some of the svarim discuss why here he says that echav means lavan's people, as opposed to before where it was the Ramban who had to say it. And he invites them to eat. So here there is a discussion as well that the idea that he shechted, the Meshech Chachma has a comment that until now we don't find that Shechita is done by the Avos for the purposes of eating, Shechita Schulin. They only find in the context of Korbanos that for eating they weren't Makbid and Shechita, they were able to eat as long as it was just killed, we call Nechira. So in the Sefer Eish Tamid, we mentioned him a few weeks ago, Rabbi Cinnamon. So he has a discussion that if the Avos kept the whole Torah, so why do they wait until Yaakov now to have Shechitas Chulin? So he notes, based on the Gemara in Chulin and Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that even the Jews in the Midbar didn't observe Shechita until they got into Eretz Yisrael. So between the time of Matan Torah and entering Eretz Yisrael, they also didn't have Shechita. So the Avos, when they kept the Torah, it's not more than the Jews post-Matan Torah. But Yaakov brought it up to a next Madrega, that Yaakov observed it like the Torah was kept in Eretz Yisrael. And here the Rav Soloveitchik has a point, again, this is a number of times this point emphasized, and he said that the idea of kosher slaughter, of shechita, is another reminder of the wall in between social interactions between the Jew and the Ovid of Azara. So since that's the theme that we see repeated here again and again, so this is a good time for Shechita to come into the picture. There's a very interesting point in the Sefer Ma'aris Yitzchak. The Ma'aris Yitzchak was written by somebody I acquainted with, by Yitzchak Eideltuck. It's a very fascinating Sefer on Bereishis. There's two volumes on Bereishis. So he has a comment on these next two psukim, which also synergizes us a little bit to last week, those who were with us on Shabbos, 2 weeks ago, we mentioned this, Chayisara. So, if you recall, we spoke about Chayisara Friday night, the idea that that Avram tells Eliezer that you should get a shidduch from my family specifically, and not from around here, not from Canaan. So the Rishonim asked the Ran and Ben Abachia that Avram's family, they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So why is that better? It's not such a great setting. So the Rishonim there have this idea that Midos is more important than Hashkafa, is more important than not being an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And that therefore, he was saying, I'm not so worried about the fact that their idolaters go there because of Midos. And they also say that Midos is something which comes through the family, which more so than theology. So if that's the case, so there in Chayisara, Rabbi Eideltuck and Maris Yitzchak, he discusses that we have to work out the story because it doesn't sound like they have such phenomenal midos either. So we have to figure out what exactly is the context in which to see that. But here, on these psukim, so it says here, the end of Pasuk Aleph, that v'yashav lavan l'mekomo, in the beginning of the next pasuk, v'yakov halach l'darko, Yaakov went off on his way, and Lavan went to his way. Says here they have to separate now because there's no longer anything keeping them together, because the Midos was the advantage that this family had compared to the other people in the world, even though they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But Midos also can deteriorate, that the more you engage in bad actions, the more your Midos are affected. And so by this point, so Lavan has done so many things which have taking him further and further away. He's no longer, maybe he started off as a Baal Midos, but he no longer was. And therefore, that's something that has now weakened their kesher completely, and it's time for them to part ways. That was a very interesting point. So in any event, this pasuk's also an often quoted pasuk, V'yakov halach l'darko, v'yivkavo malachei elokim. So Yaakov goes on his way, and he meets angels of God. But Yom Yaakov Kasher Ra'am, and Yaakov says when he sees them, Machane Elokim Zah, this is a camp of God. Vayikra Hashem Hamakom Ha'u Machanayim. And he calls this place Machanayim. So that language, Machanayim, is interesting because that's plural. So it just says Machane, so he calls it Machanayim. So what's the idea? So Rashi says it refers to two camps, the camp of Chutz La'aretz and the camp of Eretz Yisrael, where these Malachim are coming from. Mariel Diskin, who has a lot of mathematically oriented Divrei Torah in his Sefer. So here, this is mild compared to some of his other... just when I was looking at this, I noticed that the Divrei Torah before, which for the previous Aliyah, or from not from our Aliyah, had a chart. There's a lot of mathematically oriented Divrei Torah. So here he just notes that the Yerushalmi in Erevin says that the plural of Machane, the minimum of Machane is 10. So if he says it's a plural, so it means 20. So it means a group of 20. This is also negated to the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, because I remember my brother once telling me in Akasha, which he compared to raisin brands, that says that the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, as we mentioned before, the beginning of Vayishlach, the synergy into next week. So we find that Yaakov says that he's so grateful. Says I came here with nothing, and now now I am two camps. So you could ask, my brother's pointing out that, well, what's the big deal about that? He just split the machana up because he was afraid that one was going to get attacked. It's not some kind of indication that he has too many people to fit into one, so he has to split it up. It's not a actual precise term where the machana is. It's only two because he took one and split it up. So that's the kashi always had in the raisin bran box, because it says two scoops of raisins, but you don't know how big a scoop is. So then what's the chap saying? You can have a tiny scoop. Why is that supposed to be impressive? So the idea, you could just take one scoop and split it up into two. So what's one machana split up into two is not necessarily impressive. So, okay, so here the Yerushalmi tells us a machana has to be at least 10. So Maral Diskin writes that where it comes out that it's at least 10, and they have plurals, so you have 20. So how do you have 20? So I said this is a little bit creative math. It says, but you have Yaakov, that's one, four wives, that's five, 11 sons, that makes 16, but one extra for Yosef, because he represents two Shvatim, that part's a little gay. So 16 then, and then Dina, that's 17. Oh, I missed one already, right? So 16, 17 with Dina, that's 18. And then Rachel was pregnant, so she counts as two, so that's an extra one, that's 19. And Dvorah and Meneka, that's 20. So there were 20, so that's two machanas. And then the other set is from the Malachim. The Malachim brought a Malach for each one. Each one of them was protected by a Malach, so it's two machanas on each side. Okay, so creative interpretation. The Ramban also talks about this idea about the plural. He says maybe that's just the style of names, that names don't necessarily stick to a precise application, but convert a meaningful word into something a little more name-like, perhaps. But also, he ultimately suggests that it refers to his machane, the machane ha'alyonim. And he says that Rashi's focus on Eretz Yisrael is hard because they still were far away from Eretz Yisrael. So Maral has a comment on that to defend Rashi. So it's all about where you're going to, it's not about where you are. But where you're going to, so they're going towards Eretz Yisrael, so therefore the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael come to greet them. We see other interpretations also, as Soloveitchik discusses, and quoting from the Targum, that the three camps are referred to here, and refers to the Machane Yisrael, the Machane Levi, and the Machane Shechina, all surrounding the Makom HaMikdash. There is also an idea in the Yonos ben Uzziel that he didn't know, when he saw this camp, this people approaching, he didn't know whether they were angels or they were from Esav or Lavan, whether they were enemy troops. So Simchas Lisabroid in the Sam Derech says, that's a little funny, right? Because he's not sure which one it is. So he makes a permanent name based on that, based on his confusion. So he says, yeah, because the whole point is that his emunah is such that he realized that either one, it's still all Yad Hashem. So whether it's Esau's troops, whether it's Malachim, that's all fine. And he's davka showing that they are identical, practically. or at least they have the same purpose. Sham Shnofal Hirsch points out that a machane is a reference for a temporary resting place. And so Yaakov and his family, they're looking for a homeland, while the angels, they're looking for a place for the Shechina to express itself in this earth. So that's how they end up meeting up, and that's the reference to two machanas. In the Sefer Shar Bas Rabin, he talks about how there are two types of angels. He says there are angels who are created B'sheish Shmei Bereishis, part of the heavenly corporation up there, and then there are angels that tzaddikim create when they do mitzvahs. So Yaakov always had angels with him because of his many mitzvahs, but now these are the Malachi Elokim, these are part of the Malachim from Shesh Shmei Bereishis. So that's the two camps, two different types of angels. And we'll just end by noting the Drashus Aran in Drosh Hay. So he notes that this trip towards Eretz Yisrael is a place of closeness to Hashem. So therefore, Yaakov runs into the angels, which represent this idea of the Skarvus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ran understands that the camps represents three camps. There is the camp of the Elyonim, the Kadosh Baruch Hu's world, and there is the Tachtonim, this world down here. And then there's Eretz Yisrael, which is the place for both to meet, which is the place where the Elyonim and the Tachtonim come together, and therefore that represents its own environment. And so each one has its own status here. That's a discussion also. The Ramban talks about that these angels are there for protection. Sandarach notes that the angels really seemingly are there to be mechazik his whole derech in life. But he notes that that's really the same thing, that sending the angels for protection is really about this endorsement of this path, that he stays firm and that he continues to seek out God's presence in the world and to reaffirm God's presence even in light of all kinds of challenges. This is one of the major inspirations that we derive from Yaakov Avinu as he continues his journey, and as we glean what we can from him when we read Parshas Vayetze. All right, so I wish you all a wonderful break here, a wonderful Thanksgiving. God willing, I will see you, I guess, on Monday, and we will take things from there. All right. Monday, we're going to continue with some of the chinuch. There is a need, I guess, from our mom.